and Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta mornings.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley Blast.
The Suns will spend Tuesday night watching basketball, not playing basketball, and to date, that is by far their biggest victory of the season. Avoiding the play-in may not seem like much for a team chest deep in luxury tax, but it's a big deal in the Western Conference, and it means, barring a freak injury in practice, the Suns will be well-rested and fully healthy entering their championship or bust postseason, and that has always been priority number one. There's also a growing hope that the late season ascension of Bradley Beal isn't just a bender or a hot streak, rather a great player finally showing the range of his game, a player turning out to be a far better defender than his reputation would lead you to believe, a player who can clearly wreck you on both sides of the floor, and a player who finally makes this super team look, well, kind of like a super team. Of course, it might all be a mirage. The Suns have been reckless with their focus, reckless with our emotions all season long. It's why the fan base seemed on the verge of mutiny a few times this season, most recently when the scoreboard read 35-4. But there are very few fan bases in North America that deserve redemption more than us, and maybe, just maybe, this is the year the basketball gods finally move on to their next victim. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
I mean, they bought them in for a reason. It's a reason that they're top heavy. That's what everybody say, right? It's a reason why, you know, everybody keep going around the first apron and second apron. I still don't even know what the hell that means, but I just keep hearing about it, right? Cooking apron, whatever you want to call it. But he can be that piece to get them over the hump. Like, you know, we saw a flash of what he had, 36, 38 last night.
36.
In a must-win situation. So I think he can be that guy, right? And when it comes down to Bradley Beal, it's all about his health. Like, how healthy is Bradley Beal? That's what it solely comes down to.
It's Kendrick Perkins of ESPN. He was on with Wolf and Luke yesterday with Paul Calvisi sitting in talking about Bradley Beal, whether or not he can be the heartbeat of the team. And I don't think we should be seduced by the number. Again, we'll focus on numbers in terms of as opposed to impact.
Mm-hmm.
The impact and the numbers were there for Bradley Beal on Sunday in that game against Minnesota. He was magnificent. But if you can bottle up the impact, the energy he's playing with on both sides of the floor, the efficiency he's working with offensively, how hard he's working defensively,
the leadership he's providing,
the leadership, the emotion he's showing, cut and paste that over the course of any best of seven series, and the Suns are going to do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get tied to the fact, hey, Bradley Beal needs to score 36 for the Suns to win. No, he doesn't.
No, that's not it.
He doesn't, but he's got to impact the game at that level.
Yeah,
and he can do that.
He's been doing that.
And lighten the load on Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, two guys who have had playoff disappointments in their own respective careers. Then we're talking.
Yeah, listen, it's really something else for the Suns to go through a season in which their fan base was pretty much up in arms, many swearing off the team, many just swearing at the team. And then the whole thing to be flipped now, where it's the Timberwolves fans who are going, oh, great, of course, this is the Minnesota way.
That is exactly what they're, I mean, I've been reading comment boards from Minnesota. I know a guy who's a Timberwolves fan. He's like, yeah, the one team we didn't want to play in the first round was the Suns, and here we go.
Anthony Edwards in three games against the Suns this year, 43 points total on 42 shots attempted.
Is that good?
No, it's not good. That's a math problem. Shut up, Jared!
Look, I think a lot of people, I'm not going to say it's going to be unanimous, but a lot of people are looking at that particular matchup and the recency of the matchups and the one-sided nature of the matchups, and they're going to favor the Suns in the series. Kendrick Perkins, however, not necessarily one of them.
I just think the physicality of the Timberwolves, I think it's built for the playoffs. I think you give Carl Anthony Towns, you know, a week of rest, you know, they're going to have the preparation. But I just think of their perimeter defense, man. You know, you look at Mike Conley, old school Mike Conley. He's 31st in the league in opponent's field goal percentage. Anthony Edwards, he's 10th in the league in opponent's field goal percentage. Jaden McDaniels, he's 4th in the league in opponent's field goal percentage. And then when you have Rudy down there, it's like, okay, y'all just got to fine-tune some things. And I know the Suns been spanking them in the regular season, but the little chirping at the end of the game could have sparked the fire for them. But I've just been really high, and I'm really sold that consistent defense is going to win you championships. And I think that the Minnesota Timberwolves' physicality might overshadow the Phoenix Suns. But again, I got the series going 6 or 7 games. I haven't put out my prediction yet. I think it might go 7, but I still wouldn't be surprised if Phoenix win it. It's a hard series to pick.
Yeah, Kendrick Perkins, I'm not saying he's ignoring the 3 games head-to-head, but to pick the Timberwolves with that sampling of head-to-head competition, you kind of are ignoring it. And you know, he's relying on the 79-game sample outside of what the Suns, what the Wolves did against the Suns, which is fair to do. I mean, it's a much bigger sample.
Right.
And I do think the Timberwolves are capable of playing way better than they have against Phoenix this year. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and you talk about the comfort level that the Suns have against this team. Their turnover issues magically go away against the Timberwolves, which is weird because they're allegedly one of the best defensive teams in the association. So maybe it locks them into a level that other teams don't. I don't know. It's just, it's, yeah, look, styles make fights.
Where have I heard that before? You also mentioned in your blast the luxury tax. That's going to get talked about a lot this offseason because yesterday the Suns made the extension complete with Grayson Allen. 4 years, $70 million. It's great for Grayson Allen. There's a lot of money going back to the league in luxury tax, over $100 million in luxury tax alone.
There's a couple things about this. You can look at it as the Suns had to do this move because as you've heard from people that if things go really bad and they have to do something dramatic like before next season, you need things to package and people to trade.
Yes.
So it's good business. And secondarily, something Gambo brought up about a week ago that I thought I hadn't even thought of before, and it was the idea, if you're tinkering with putting Royce O'Neal in the starting lineup, it's good to secure Grayson Allen's signature on that contract beforehand. Not that he's the kind of guy that would be all upset about having to come off the bench. He doesn't strike me that way. But in a season in which he has been one of the breakout stars, in a year that he was clearly playing for a contract, it's good to get this done now, because now you can do whatever you want. Not that it would have mattered in the first place, but you know how it is. If you have a guy in the starting lineup all season long, and then suddenly you go, you know what? Royce O'Neal would really be a much better matchup in this series.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, too, because we saw Grayson Allen was back in the starting lineup on Sunday. But if you look at that front line for Minnesota, that's a huge physical front line with Gobert, McDaniels, and Karl-Anthony Towns. I mean, that's all 6'10 and above. So you're getting a little bit more size with Royce O'Neal, a little bit more weight, although Grayson Allen has held up defensively on that end too. McDaniels is not really a concern on the offensive end. He's had some good games against the Suns, but he's not where that offense goes. I'm real curious to see what Frank Vogel does.
So am I. And I'm real curious to see if the the Timberwolves are going to have any real belief. You know, is what they are saying accurate? That, hey, of course we can beat them. Of course. And we think we're going to win every time we take the floor. These numbers are so lopsided and so contrary to what the rest of the season looks like for each team.
Yes.
That it just looks, this looks like a gift for the Suns.
It does. But
now they got to capitalize.
If the Suns can duplicate that in game one on Saturday, they might just waltz.
That's
in the
what I'm
series.
Saying. Yeah,
they steal their heart early.
Exactly.
Yeah. Coming up next, believe it or not, the Arizona Cardinals getting back to work for the 2024 season. Yesterday, we'll tell you what the head coach had to say about it next. It's Bickley and Marotta mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. What will the Suns' rotation look like when the playoffs get underway? And will Bol Bol be a part of it? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
First day off-season program, so a lot of juice in there, a lot of energy, some new faces, and excited to get to work with these guys. 8-week program, and excited about the improvements that we've made in the off-season to help the players out.
It's Jonathan Gannon, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, headed into year two, which in a way got started yesterday. Phase one, off-season conditioning. A lot of the players in the facility in Tempe getting the jump on year two of Jonathan Gannon and year two of kind of a rebuilding Arizona Cardinals. How about that?
Yeah.
Obviously, the process is not finished yet. It continues. They can do, there's a lot of to-dos, and a lot of those can be done next Thursday, starting next Thursday in the draft.
Yep.
And we'll get into that. But it's, again, we marveled at year one of Jonathan Gannon and how the win-loss results were they were identical to the year before. But the feel about everything in the organization is just so much more positive.
Oh, yeah. Listen, and again, it was for the Cardinals to finish the season the way they did to what appears to have really established a real foundation, that's a victory. And that was what last year was for. Uh-huh. This year's now for winning. And I don't want this to be another bridge year. I don't want next year to be the year. This has got to be the year. And if we've got enough quarterback, it very easily can be.
Yes.
And so now one of the good things about this is Kyler Murray has proven he's, and we don't talk about that enough, that Kyler Murray came back the way he did from that knee surgery, from a major injury, and he gave this team, he kept playing, wasn't great, but at the end he was 3-5? A missed field goal away from being 4-4. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now he gets a full off season, and if he's as vested in taking another step forward as he was in proving he could come back from a major injury, then this could be really exciting.
Culture for an organization to be successful takes a long time to build. So again, that's not a complete process for the Arizona Cardinals. It's very much under construction, but there was a lot of good work done there. Last year, Jonathan Gannon was asked yesterday when he met with the media, how would he describe the team's culture as it stands right now?
We've got a bunch of guys that are team first guys in there that are competitive and want to improve their games. That's what the culture is. And I think, you know, you have to work on that daily because your actions go into culture on a daily basis. So we all got to be aligned and we got to be on it. And when we get out of alignment, that's okay. You got to get back in alignment quick. So that's what wins, and our guys understand that, and I'm happy where it's at day one.
Yeah, he also asked if the off-season program looked as he envisioned it to look.
It does. It does. How it comes to fruition, the process of getting there, not always. I think, how we have it laid out, you know, going into year two, what this off-season looked like, what now with the players back in the building, what that looks like for these 8 weeks, you know, time's ticking, 8 weeks, I keep saying that. It's not a lot of time, you know what I mean? We got to do a lot and improve a lot before we go on break to get to training camp and going into year two. But, it's kind of how I always envisioned it. That's what we're doing.
It's an exciting time of the year for a team like the Cardinals.
There's nobody who is holding out. Because one of the stories that Adam Schefter has been talking about is this is going to be the year that wide receivers get paid off season. Mm-hmm. Devontae Smith just got paid by the Eagles. There's a whole list of guys who are lining up to get their money. And some might get done, some might bleed through training camp, some might even bleed to like the days before week one. And so the Cardinals have you know, they've got an established foundation. Players know what to expect from the head coach. They've developed a level of consistency, and this is where you know the culture is real. When a football team continues to fight week in, week out, day in, day out, that means there is something very real in place. Mm-hmm. Any football team could have a good week. Any football team could have a good day. Can you have a good month?
Yeah, or when
can you have a good season?
Going deeper than that, again, look at how that team played from day one. It was very evident. I remember tuning into the season opener against Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And who was it that Kaiser White was lit up on the sidelines?
Very early on.
In that first
dirty play that we all cheered for. Like, yes, finally.
Not that it was.
Team Cupcake no more.
Yeah, not that it was dirty, but wow.
Well, this it was
seems,
dirty, but.
It seems different. He got flagged for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of, that lasted throughout, even when Kaiser White was out for a good portion of the second half of the season. That lasted. Whoever was in that uniform was playing hard for their coaches.
Yep.
And that's another thing people are not talking about a lot either, is there was no turnover on this coaching staff. For a young coaching staff, that was the storyline last year at this mm-hmm. time. It was like, wow, these guys are really inexperienced. And look at some of these ages. They're defensive coordinators, 30 years old, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they got through year one. But a year of continuity completely throughout the coaching staff, you don't see that very often.
And this is where context really matters. For the Cardinals to find a level of consistency with a coaching staff with a triumvirate of dudes who had never done the job before. Their OC, their DC, and their HC. Head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. They were all rookies to that post. So not only are there growing pains that you would expect, credibility in the locker room, guys who have been in the league 8 to 10 years wondering, what do you have to tell me? Who is you? Right? And every football team would be right in feeling that way. And clearly this coaching staff checked those boxes.
Yeah. And now they have 3 years of combined experience in those respective positions.
Right.
One other thing that people, the media was trying to get out of Jonathan Gannon was you mentioned, hey, there's going to be a joint practice partner this year. Any hint on who that might be?
You know, I would, but I don't know if that's set in stone yet because the NFL has a say on that. So it's an AFC team and it's out east, but I'll just hold on that for a little bit until it gets finalized. I don't want you guys guessing, but I really don't exactly know. Here's the deal. I'm 99% sure when we're doing it and who we're doing it, which means I'm not sure. You see what I'm saying? I got that from Frank Wright. If you're 99% sure, you're really not sure. So that's where I'm at with that.
All right. So
that's
AFC, out east,
mm-hmm.
Jets, Buffalo, Miami, New England.
Didn't he earlier say that they were an AFC team and they were good? So he's not talking about the Jets.
He's not talking about the Patriots.
Monty
Ossenford's worked at New England.
Mm-hmm. Here's a follow-up on that that subject, by the way.
Man, anything when I got to get on a plane and go east, that's east to me now. So that's where it's at. It'll be hot.
Little tidbit.
Dolphins.
Yeah, Florida's hot.
Ooh, is that really where you want to go for training camp? Is Florida? Ugh. I'm going to just stay here and work outside.
Work in the air conditioning? Yeah, right.
We'll find that out soon. The schedule should be announced.
So maybe it's the Dolphins.
Next few weeks,
okay.
I would imagine.
All right.
We shall find out. Coming up next, we will talk NFL Draft with NFL.com draft analyst Lance Zierlein. He'll join the program straight ahead here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. We are nearing the 2024 NFL Draft, where the Arizona Cardinals could be movers and shakers. Here to talk about it with us, host a talk show in Houston, Texas, also an NFL Draft analyst for NFL.com, Lance Zierlein, kind enough to join us this morning on the Arizona Sports Line. Lance, good morning.
Lance.
How are you, man?
How are we doing, guys? How are we doing?
Doing well. We were having a discussion earlier, and we've been having the discussions for so long about Monty Ossenford sitting pretty at number four with the Cardinals and all these teams ringing the phones. What are the New England Patriots going to do at number three? I think that's kind of where the focus is going on the start of the draft, if you will.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. So in my last mock that I had, which was about 3 weeks ago, I had Monty trading out with the Minnesota Vikings and then trading back up to get his hands on Dallas Turner. And I think that, you know, if Monty does trade back, he still needs to, I think at some point collecting all this draft capital is great, but you need to sit down and take some really good players. So even if he did trade back out of the number four spot, I think he would be at some point aggressive in moving back up. I do think there would be at least two draft picks made in the first round for the Arizona Cardinals. So I do think Monty's going to be aggressive moving back up the board like he did. He did that with Paris Johnson, right? I think he came back up.
Yeah.
So that's normal. I think that's normal. You trade back to gain some amount of capital, and you trade back up and still get the players you like. So I do think that there is a 50-50 chance that could be that fourth. I don't know about 50-50. I'll say there's a 40% chance, probably closer to 35% chance he moves the pick. But if he does move the pick, I'd say there's about an 80% chance that he aggressively moves up either back into the first round or moves up early in the second round, potentially even trading, you know, with the 33rd pick, 34th pick.
I want to ask you about quarterbacks, but first I want to ask you about wide receivers. We're collecting opinions from people who know, are these three guys all grading out very close together, or is there some separation? Is Marvin Harrison Jr. clearly the dude at that position?
Oh, no, he's not. I mean, it's him. For me, it's him and Neighbors, and then a little below that is Roma Dunte. Marvin is the most polished, the most explosive is Malik Neighbors, and then the best ball winner is Roma Dunze. And so depending on, all of them have good size, depending on what you covet, what you prioritize as a team, as a philosophy, an organizational philosophy, you may have different feelings. There's plenty of teams that have Malik Neighbors ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. So this is, but I think everyone will tell you it's pretty close that those three are clearly in a different level. Some people love Roma Dunze, and others aren't as high on him. I think with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Neighbors, it comes down to, so there's a little, just a small amount of mystery with with Marvin Harrison Jr., only because he didn't go through really any of the processes before the draft, not the typical processes. So that may bother some teams. For other people, as long as they have medicals on them, and as long as, you know, they like the tape, they're not going to care as much. And as long as they like the person, and they've got to, you know, get to know the person as well as they can. I think Marvin has had some interviews with teams and certainly made some top 30 visits. But with Malik Neighbors, you have somebody who's more explosive, who's faster, who has the ability, I think, to be a bigger deep ball threat. So right now, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the polished of the two. The guy with a little higher ceiling for me is Neighbors, but typically when you talk about higher ceiling, you also have to mention a little lower floor than Marvin Harrison Jr. But so that's where I would be on those two guys. I'd be shocked if the Cardinals don't have their choice of the two. I don't think any other wide receiver is going to go inside the top three. Mm-hmm. But I am interested to see, you know, who they look at, who they feel like fits Kyler Murray the best, or they even doing anything with Kyler Murray in consideration. I mean, there's a chance, and maybe the smart move is not to draft a wide receiver for your quarterback. Draft him just for the organization, because you never know what's going to happen with that quarterback position. And anyway, all three of these guys would be good targets for Kyler, so it doesn't really matter.
Lance Zierlein, NFL.com, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. I want to stay on receivers, because you mentioned your latest mock draft from about 3 weeks ago, and you did have a good amount of wheeling and dealing by the Cardinals. They would end up, in your projection, trading with Seattle for that 16 pick and getting what a lot of people think is the fourth best wide receiver in this draft, and that's Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. Uh-huh. In terms of dropping, and the numbers are gaudy, and he had 17 touchdowns last year and played in that prolific offense, but when we're talking about drop-off, you had those three guys elevated. How big is the drop-off to Brian Thomas Jr., and could he grow into a wide receiver one in your mind?
Well, athletically, the drop-off is very minimal. I mean, it's maybe not at all. The production, the athleticism, the size, everything checks out. And talking to people behind the scenes, they'll tell you that he doesn't quite have the same competitive nature that Malik Neighbors has. Not to say he's not a competitive player, but he doesn't have quite that same dog mentality. But I know his wide receiver coach at LSU has told some different scouts that, hey, this is a guy who has another level of football still in him. So you look at all that productivity, you look at the size, the speed, the ability to win catches in the air, and it's exciting to think. I mean, for me, it is the big three, and then Brian Thomas is in his own category, and then you go to everyone else. So I think Brian Thomas, could he be a wide receiver one? Yeah, if he has the wide receiver one mentality. I think he has the wide receiver one traits. I think he has the wide receiver one ability. But a big part, when you look around the true wide receiver ones, is that mentality, the competitiveness, that dog mentality that really separates those types of players. And I think that that's one thing that he'll have to, you know, will have to be answered as he moves along. But one thing that's not in doubt is when it comes to his ability to be a really good wide receiver. Oh, that's not really in question. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's not really in question that the next guy, you know, after the top three wide receivers, the next guy up pretty much for everyone is going to be Brian Thomas Jr.
When you look at the quarterbacks, the college season ended. It was Drake May and Caleb Williams. It was like chocolate and ice cream and vanilla ice cream. Some like one, some like the other. Now it's Caleb 1 and Jaden Daniels 2. How do you assess and rank the quarterbacks and how many are going to go in the first 10 picks?
Well, I think four are going to end up going in the first four picks. And I've got Caleb and Jaden Daniels basically head-to-head. I mean, Jaden had the better – you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone who didn't say Jaden Daniels has the best tape from this year. You'd almost have to be trying to find something else to say it's Caleb Williams or really anyone else. Bo Nix had a really good year on tape as well. But when you look at a pro-style type of passing attack, and you want to talk about production, you want to talk about, you know, the ability to play dynamic football, it's Jaden Daniels in terms of encompassing everything. And, of course, Caleb Williams has a lot of that stuff in his background as well. I think that Caleb offers you a high upside, but there's things on tape that bother me because he really takes a lot of plays off schedule unnecessarily. He won't just take the singles, meaning, you know, the quick 3-yard gain and let somebody try to catch and run for a first down when it's third and six. He has to try to play hero ball all the time. And while it's commendable that he has that confidence in himself and he wants to make plays and does have the ability to make some plays, he takes some unnecessary sacks. He does some unnecessary things that he needs to work out of the system. I mean, the NFL just can't be a pure – it can't just be a pure league of extending plays. We've seen that with Kyler at times. You got to have a quarterback who understands how to move forward, and if it's time to throw a completion and punt, if it's time to throw the ball away and punt, that's part of pro football too. So I think reining that in – is going to be an issue, but as they always say, you'd rather say whoa than go to a quarterback.
Right.
You'd rather pull a guy in than you'd have to, hey, Louietta, we know there's something else in there. Let's try to get a little bit more out of him. As far as Drake May is concerned, that was just a narrative that was built up in the available, you know, draft media that was out there. It never was that way on tape. When you looked at tape, Drake May's just got some wild inconsistencies from an accuracy standpoint. He doesn't play consistent enough football. The productivity level is not where it should be. The talent's there, but I think I gave him a 6.5 in my grades, which is a boom bust grade. It's the same I gave to Zach Wilson. It's the same I gave, I believe, to Justin Fields and some others. There's just certain guys that you know could be really good, but you're a little bit worried. You go in there a little worried about him, and he's one of those guys for me. So I think Jaden and Caleb should clearly be the first two. If it's Drake, then some, you know, then Washington just loves the physical dimensions because Jaden is a little thinner quarterback, and Drake looks like a pro quarterback. And then if J.J. McCarthy somehow sneaks in there, well, then we're talking about a lot of intangibles.
Yep. Lance, great stuff. Thanks,
Lance,
so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Lance Zierlein, NFL.com is where you can see his mock drafts, his draft analysis. He joined us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, we're still days away from Suns, T-Wolves, but the subject of pressure is coming up. Is there more pressure on KD or Devin Booker going into this series? We'll get into that and more next. Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Burnsy. The Phoenix Suns perhaps have the perfect first-round matchup in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Why is it the perfect matchup? And is it actually the perfect matchup? We'll tell you today on the Burns and Gambo Show, 2-6 on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
I believe it's going to solely come down to who is going to defend Karl Anthony Towns. And I think that person should be Kevin Durant. I think he has the capability of doing it. That's going to be the X factor. If they shut Karl Anthony Towns and take him completely out of this series, the Suns is going to win it.
That's Kendrick Perkins, ESPN NBA analyst. He was on with Wolf and Luke yesterday here on Arizona Sports on the key to victory for the Suns, coming down to defending Karl Anthony Towns. Kevin Durant certainly in that picture. Kevin Durant has been an impact player on the defensive side of the ball a lot this year for the Phoenix Suns. It's got to be ramped up. But I talked about, in their own individual careers, even before they joined forces, both Devin Booker and Kevin Durant have been, they've had fingers pointed at them for disappointing playoff exits. Certainly, we've seen our share from Devin Booker on that front in recent years. The last two playoff exits really fall into that category for him. Before Kevin Durant got to town, he had those in Brooklyn, certainly. Mm-hmm. Even going back to the Oklahoma City days when they were trying to climb that mountain. And then they joined forces last year, and I think we were hoping against hope that the chemistry would come together and everything would click into place, and it just didn't. The Suns were not as good a team as the Denver Nuggets. I don't know if it necessarily falls on one of them, but you know, this year with all the expectations, and we've had this talk of expectation all season long, 82 games are now in the rearview mirror. They win 49 games. They're the sixth seed. You know, we're feeling elated because the Suns avoided the play-in. They accomplished that goal. But this is not where they wanted to be. And you start talking about pressure. When you have this much star power on a team, that's when those stars are counted on to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You break it down. Is there more pressure on Devin Booker or Kevin Durant? I think the answer is clear in my mind.
Yeah. And who is it?
I think it's Devin Booker.
Yeah, so do I. I think Devin Booker's playoff reputation has been spotty, and I'm not sure last year, the ending of last year, I think it was kind of folded into the up another bad book elimination game when I'm not sure that was the story last year. The first four games against the Nuggets, I said this in a blast a few weeks ago, Devin Booker looked like the best player on the planet through those four games. We all watched him. We all saw him. Those two home games that the Suns won, he was unguardable. He was pulling up from three, making everything he shot.
Yeah,
he was incredible. It was like 36 points per game on 67% shooting. And then game five happened. And then during game five, something happened with his ankle or his foot. And he was marginalized for game six. We all saw it. So I don't know whether last year was proof that Devin Booker was about to put that thing to bed before he got a little nicked up, or whether or not this is still kind of out there for him to kind of grab one of these postseasons and put him back into headlock. So I do think clearly it's more on Devin Booker. He's the guy that doesn't have a ring. KD's got a couple of them. And this is it, and again, Devin Booker, he really jarred this city with this chillin' comment. And part of that post-game interview was, our story begins in the playoffs. Okay, if that is your viewpoint, yes, then Saturday marks judgment time, litmus test, yes, for Devin Booker.
And this is where it's confusing. This confuses me. Is Devin Booker, throughout his playoff career, now three postseasons, when he's been on the floor in games where it's the Suns have an opportunity to close out an opponent, he has been absolutely cutthroat. And that goes back to his first series, that first run, 47 points in game six against the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Closed out Denver game four, 34 points. Was okay in the closeout game in the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers. But then we saw, facing elimination, maybe a half-injured Devin Booker wasn't great. 8 for 22 against the Bucks in that in that playoff loss, 0 for 7 from three-point range. The last two exits, 11 points in the Game 7 to Dallas, and people will point at Devin Booker, and as the leader of the team, that's fair to do. Everybody stunk that day. Last year, in getting eliminated by the Denver Nuggets, they lose by 25. He scored 12 points on 4 of 13 shooting. So the opportunity to close out seems to appeal to Devin Booker, but when they're facing elimination,
he's been not good.
That's so. You know how you avoid that? You don't get eliminated.
Right, that's exactly right. Here's the other thing, and this is, and I know this to be true as somebody who has covered the greatest basketball player that's ever been. When Devin Booker failed to deliver a game-winning shot in Game 5 of the NBA Finals, it was a great defensive play from Jrue Holiday, but great players take that stuff personally, and Devin Booker hasn't done anything yet to top that individual failure. Now, I'm not calling it a failure, but if you're a basketball player who wants to be Kobe and Kobe wanted to be MJ, those moments cut deep. And you don't get over them until you do something to atone for them.
Yeah.
So that moment is still coming for Devin Booker. Hopefully it comes this year.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, the elimination game, the games against Dallas, that whole series, nobody was right. Chris Paul was not right. Book wasn't right by the end of it. It was just a disaster.
Everything was out of whack.
Everything.
Yeah.
And last year, we all saw Book kind of get nicked up in game five, and he was not the same since. But the first four games against the Nuggets, he was unbelievable.
And the whole series against the Clippers. I mean, to that point, you're right. The talk was he was the MVP of the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
The numbers he was putting up and the impact he was having on games. Going back to your point, too, about the atoning for that play.
An end-game situation on the biggest stage.
In game five, and the whole series was painful, but that was the most painful moment. Is the way that game ended at Footprint Center, and that would be the last time they would play in that building. Mm-hmm. They go on to lose game six in Milwaukee. It's almost more painful that you didn't even get the shot up.
Yes.
You have to credit Drew Holiday, who made an unbelievable high-impact, high-leverage defensive play.
Mm-hmm.
But if Devin Booker gets a shot up and misses it, you can live with it.
That's exactly right. And that has to be cutting him to the... Still, I'm sure it still does. Because the great players, that's what they expect of themselves, to win those individual moments at the highest level. And Book got that night. And like you said, and that play going back the other way, the risk they took, the alley-oop to Giannis, the fall from Chris Paul... Everything. Somebody just took a giant industrial-sized pin and just bam, right into the balloon. Pop!
Yeah. I remember my PA call after Giannis dunked it and Chris Paul fouled him.
Yeah.
I just opened up the mic and went...
Did you? I was wondering what that was.
That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. No, I know. So I do think, especially now with the chilling quote and this, and the our story begins in the playoffs. Okay. All right. All right, Book.
Yeah, time to begin the story.
Yep.
Coming up next, Sarah Cazell will take us through some social studies as we dive into the 9 o'clock hour here on the Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.